Welcome to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Stock market, wealth, personal finance, value stocks. Invest in your life.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another exciting episode. About to hand over the reins to Miranda Marquette to talk about one of my favorite topics. But before we get to that, have you ever wondered if there were a way to capitalize on all that online chatter, the millions of investors on social media? Well, guess what? Your wait's over, because that same artificial intelligence that the world's most sophisticated hedge funds use, that's at your fingertips, and you can make their edge your edge. The Buzz Index, which is licensed to an exchange-traded fund and trades under ticker symbol BUZ, provides investors with a portfolio of securities that show the highest degree of positive investor sentiment online. They don't take surveys. They don't guess. Here's what they do. They target the most mentioned large-cap U.S. stocks across the social media landscape, and the more active the conversation, the greater the reliability of the buzz. Each of those most mentioned stocks is given an insight score based on Buzz's proprietary analytics, and the 75 stocks that have the most bullish scores, those get included every month in the index. Invest in the wisdom of crowds. Head to moneytreepodcast.com/BUZZ for a link to the Buzz Index and more information. That's moneytreepodcast.com/BUZZ. I invest in the Buzz Index, but that doesn't mean that it's right for you. Do your homework on it. Check it out. All right, let's roll on this episode. Take it away, Miranda.
Today, we have with us Trip Miller. He is a managing partner of Golan Capital Partners, and he is here to talk to us today about value investing. And this is a great subject because one of the most famous value investors out there is Warren Buffett, and we all would like to invest like Warren Buffett. So welcome to the show today, Trip.
Thanks so much for having me on. I'm excited to be on.
Can you tell me a little bit about what your fund does and how you personally invest? Like, what is your investing philosophy, and how does that work into value investing?
Certainly. First and foremost, I'm a value investor, as you said before. And so for me, what that means is that I'm trying to buy a good or great business at a discount to our conservative appraisal when we look out, you know, over a number of years, maybe 5 to 7 years. So for us, that narrows the playing field down considerably due to the fact that most businesses just don't qualify for us. And when we talk about qualifying, we're looking both from a quantitative and a qualitative perspective. We kind of say we're looking for a good to great business run by honorable, capable people at a discount price. And most importantly, we got to be able to understand it. So we talk about what Charlie Munger and Warren Buffett talk about, which is circle of competence. And we do the best we can to stay inside of that circle of competence. We hope it grows over time. But, you know, I think the trick is knowing your limitations and not fooling yourself and getting outside of that.
Okay, great. So now you talked about quantitative and qualitative traits that you look for. What are some of the things that you actually look for as you start digging into a company and trying to decide if it's something that you want to add?
Sure. I'll start with the qualitative side. Very simplified. We used to kind of laugh and say that we look for businesses that Warren and Charlie would want to own. It's changed a little bit. Now we look for businesses that Warren and Charlie would want to own, but also that Amazon can't hurt. That's kind of one of our second verses now. It seems like Amazon's very popular out there with investors, and they're doing a marvelous job taking over different segments of the economy. And so we think a lot about that in different industries of, you know, what a company, whether it's Amazon or like Amazon, what is this new age technology effect on older existing businesses? So qualitatively, you know, we're looking for businesses with that proverbial moat around it. I always think if I were to give someone $1 billion to start a company, could they go and hurt the business that we're investing in? If not, then maybe we've got something. Also, too, on the qualitative side, we want honorable, capable, skilled management that hopefully has a lot of skin in the game. So we love to invest with people whose name is the business, or so to speak, on the building, or they own a lot of stock in the company, or they're acquiring stock aggressively, whether it be for buybacks to benefit all shareholders or themselves personally. And then we look at, you know, a lot of things, you know, on the return side, which rolls into the quantitative side. But, you know, have they been really good stewards of our capital and past shareholders' capital as investors? So the thought being is when the company makes a dollar, they've got a handful of the choices that they can do with that dollar. Have they been good stewards of that capital and effective reinvestors of that capital? We all know that at the end of the day, if there's nothing else to do, they can send us a dividend. That is not our preferred choice usually with most of these businesses we're investing in, because we believe their prospects for growth, reinvesting that capital are much higher than ours would be, net of the tax we would pay if they paid us a dividend. So that's kind of high level qualitative and quantitative. The final piece on the quantitative side is, in theory, we say we're looking to buy, you know, a 50 cent dollar. So we're looking to pay half of our conservative appraisal for a business at the point of entry, and we hope that business is growing over time.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. So if you were talking to an individual investor who is looking for some companies and places to start with value investing, where would you recommend they begin?
I think a couple of things are just, you know, mentally. I think that an independent individual investor should think a lot about, you know, what are my long-term goals? When do I need this capital? So we always tell people when we talk to them, look, if you need this capital in less than a year, don't give it to us. You probably shouldn't have that capital at work in the market. You know, most of our investors, I would say, are looking out at a minimum of 5 years, but many 20, 25 years, and wanting to preserve and grow that capital. So I think one of the places to start for me and for others would be just think about the brands that you use every day and think about businesses kind of, I think about inverting businesses and thinking about what might be around in 20 years. What do you have confidence in? You know, I have great confidence that, you know, a business like Amazon will be bigger and better and stronger than it is today and be a bigger part of our daily lives. You know, obviously a lot of us use Apple or Google products and services in our daily lives. So, you know, big, great companies like that that have tons of cash flow that, you know, don't need to borrow a lot of money to survive and obviously could weather economic storms that we eventually will have. In our country, we go through recessions, you know, from time to time. It's been a while since we've had one, but I kind of think, you know, kind of backing into great investments that way by thinking about what do I use every day and two, what will be around? What do you think businesses are that'll be bigger and better and stronger in 5, 10, 15, 20 years?
I like that idea. You talked about weathering a recession. What are some of the signs of a business with solid value that is likely to weather a recession? Like, what are some of the things that you can look for as you start kind of weeding through all of the companies out there?
Sure. One of the things we love to see is, you know, a 5 to 10 year period of revenue growth and also free cash flow growth. So, you know, hopefully the top line's growing and the bottom line's growing. And I know we're getting long in the tooth here, both since we've had a recession in 2009. So we're getting closer to this 10-year period. But historically, if you looked over, you know, 10-year periods, if not 5-year periods, and you've had growing top and bottom lines, you've probably found a pretty good business, because usually we've experienced a recession somewhere in between there. So, you know, if you go back and look at businesses that performed well in the last recession, a business like McDonald's that we do own, I believe was up in 2008 and 2009, a business like AutoZone that was up in 2008 and 2009, although we have recently made some comments out there publicly about our concerns about the auto parts space and the automotive service space as it relates to the new technology coming along with electric vehicles and autonomous driving. So, you know, we think about things like that, you know, history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes. So businesses that have done well and past inflection points of the market or the economy tend to do well or survive better in future ones. So the basic staples that you think about every day, I mean, products that you use when you go to the supermarket, they tend to survive pretty well. You don't see the revenue fluctuation. They're in a great bull market. They may not run as well and run as fast as others that are more cyclical, but in slower periods of the economy or down markets, they tend to protect you better.
That makes a lot of sense. How can people start investing if they maybe don't have a lot of money? How do you start investing in kind of these individual stocks? One of the things that I talk a lot about is investing and using automatic investment accounts to index. Sorry, I meant indexing. One of the things I talk a lot about is indexing, especially for new kind of novice investors, because you can just sign up for an automatic investment account, use some dollar cost averaging, and just get started in an index. So if you don't have a lot of money, how do you get started with some of these companies, or how can you make the most of every dollar that you have to start investing?
I think you hit the nail on the head on several topics. One is get started investing as early as you can. I mean, the power of compound interest and compounding your money over a long period of time is quite staggering. So even if you have a little to invest very early on, if you have a 30, 40, 50-year time horizon, it's really amazing what that can grow to. If put in businesses that will be your silent partner, they're going to be growing while you're working. and hopefully adding more. Two, as you touched on, I mean, dollar cost averaging is a wonderful thing, or having a consistent process to reinvest monthly, I think, is, or quarterly or even annually, is very important. You know, for a small investor, even older or at a young age, to develop a plan and be disciplined about it, it's no different than the way we go through our process of allocating capital when we invest. I think it's so important to be consistent and be disciplined. And there's some really great, you know, low cost, no load mutual funds out there. I'm a little bit biased toward those. But, you know, whether it's an index approach like you touched on and you're arbitraging time, or a specific, you know, mutual fund that's no load, I think that, you know, investors will do well just to get started and be consistent over time with adding capital. And if they have the capital when the markets do trade off, you know, 20% or more, history has shown that you can make a lot of money, you know, over time by coming out strong from those inflection points. So if you can add a lot of money when things go bad and have the discipline and the courage to invest when things are down, that generally has provided the greatest long-term results.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for joining us today. For our listeners, can you once again tell people where they can find you?
Sure. You can go to our website, www.dellandcapitalpartners.com, and all our contact information is on there, and letters and information, and we'd be happy to talk to anybody anytime and be of service to them.
All right, great. Thank you so much. And now we'll move into the roundtable portion of our show.
Absolutely love that interview. And we're about to have our roundtable discussion on value investing. But before we get to that, I mentioned in the pre-roll that I invest in the Buzz Index. But something else I like about what Jamie Wise and the Buzz Index team does, they have a fantastic newsletter. It doesn't come out weekly, doesn't come out monthly. It comes out whenever the buzz changes. So even if you initially just want to kind of kick the tires on the Buzz Index, check this out. Sign up for their Buzz newsletter. Here's what you do. Head to moneytreepodcast.com/BUZZ, and you'll see that you can sign up for their newsletter. And I love seeing just how the Buzz Index works. Jamie and his team write some fantastic stuff, and it's absolutely free. So check out how you can make the wisdom of crowds work for you. moneytreepodcast.com/BUZZ. All right. Miranda, nice interview.
Thanks, Joe. And it's exciting to have you back in with us. We've missed you. Where have you been? What have you been up to?
Well, I got locked in my mom's basement for 2 weeks and couldn't get out. And the shortwave radio wasn't working. So there it is.
Your mom locked you in the basement? What did you do wrong?
I didn't eat my peas, apparently.
You didn't learn to feed them to the dog?
Right.
That's what I always did.
Right. Hey, mom, look over there. What? Then you shovel them off your plate, right?
So we also have Doug Goldstein joining us. He hasn't been on hiatus, but he has been in Israel, where he always is. How are you today, Doug?
Hi, what? Hi,
that
hi
was
who?
Just awful.
I'm you know, not high at all. But hi, everyone.
All right. And we also have Linda P. Jones from Be Wealthy and Smart.
Hi, Miranda.
How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm okay. Well, this has been enough awkward banter. Let's talk about our interview and talk about investing a little bit, shall we? Somebody say yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes. It's about to, I've been waiting 2 weeks for this. I can't wait. Let's go.
You guys, do I sound weird to you? I'm hearing myself.
No, you sound fine.
You sound fantastic.
Really? I'm hearing myself.
Yeah. Linda's just hearing voices, everybody.
That's awesome.
Happens most shows.
I want you to buy or sell. I mean, what stocks are they saying? Whispering
in your ear. What are they saying?
Yeah. So let's start with Linda. What do those voices in your head say about value investing? What does value investing mean to you?
Well, to me, it means buying below what a stock is worth. So buying it at a discount. So figuring out what a stock is worth, what a company should sell for, and then being able to buy it for less than that.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. But I guess my next question is, how do you decide what a stock is worth? I mean, how do you know you're getting something at a discount? I mean, I think a lot of people have a hard time with that because, you know, you're like, well, I mean, it's, you know, below value and we want to get a good value. But how do you know? How do you set that number? How do you figure out if you are getting a good deal?
Well, you can tell from the metrics. You can look at some different numbers. One number that I look at is the PE ratio, which isn't the end-all be-all by any means, but it does give you an indication of what an investor will pay for the next dollar of earnings. So if your P-E ratio is 15, and you know the average for the market is about 17 over the long run, you're paying $15 for $1 of additional earnings, and that's less than the average for the market, versus a stock like Amazon, where you're paying, you know, I think it's $178 for $1 of earnings. So huge difference there.
That's a really good example. What about you, Doug? What do you see as value investing, and how do you decide whether something is a good value?
You know, I think that it is based on a real analysis of the fundamentals of the company. So Linda brought up price earnings ratio, which is probably the most common thing that people look at. It's also the quickest. And if you go to Yahoo Finance, it's right there. And you can say, hey, you know, if this stock is trading at a PE of 2000, that's probably pretty high. That means that you're paying $2,000 for every $1 of earning that a company has. On the other hand, it's not a be-all and end-all. You've got to compare like companies to other like companies. And there are other types of ratios you can look at, like the dividends and the sales. So I think someone who wants to be a really good value investor starts with the PE, which is frankly where I also start, Linda, but then dives in further and makes sure that there are going to be many different fundamental ratios that each and every one of them in and of themselves makes you think this is a good buy, and then combined all together, hopefully it really is a good buy.
One of the things that I found interesting is that Tripp mentioned looking for businesses that Amazon can't hurt. So he talked about, you know, if I had $1 billion to give to somebody or a tech company, would it hurt, you know, this company I'm investing in? Do you think like that at all, Joe? When you're looking for an investment, do you try and figure out, is there a risk here in the future? Are there other businesses that are likely to do it better?
Absolutely. You know, what's funny is I didn't think about that, you know, Amazon coming in and crushing them. But I think if you don't do that type of thing anywhere in your financial plan, I mean, I really widen his argument to looking at everything first that can go wrong. I think it's just great risk management, right? Whether I'm buying an investment, I'm getting ready to drive my car, I'm going to move into a new house, I want to look at all the things that can go wrong and have a plan of what do I do in that situation. So absolutely.
Yeah, very cool. And I think that too. I mean, I think that that's one of the best things you can do is take a step back and say, okay, this looks like a really good idea right now, but you know, what are the downsides here? And he pointed out Amazon. I mean, you think about it and you're like, Amazon's, you know, widening its reach. It just bought Whole Foods. I mean, Amazon's a grocery store now. So it's just kind of interesting to have to take a step back and look at that. What about you, Doug? Do you kind of do that same thing, that sort of risk analysis?
Yeah, Miranda. You know, of course, I like to have money managers handle, in fact, my own money. But when I do look at stocks and I try to figure out what the real risk is involved in the investment, I kind of like to think also like Warren Buffett. You know, when I was speaking to Warren last night, he told me that he tries to look for a position that it's like a castle and it has a moat around it. You know, I think many of us have discussed this metaphor before. I think the idea that you need to buy a company that has so much brand recognition, so much cash available, such a strong product line and great management, all of that's like the moat that's going to protect your investment. And if you can then buy it for a lower price than let's say that the price that you see the stock is trading at is currently lower than what the market is in fact trading at, meaning if you think it's worth $20 a share and the market has it at $15 a share, you know it's a screaming buy.
And I like, though, that you kind of bring that in. You kind of bring something into that. You said you think that it's worth, if you see that it's trading at $15 per share and you think it's worth $20 a share. You know, I really like that kind of subjectivity that you're bringing into it, because a lot of the time when you get right down to it, all of this stuff, right, all of these values attached to stocks or whatever the investment is, whatever the asset is, all the values attached to it are largely subjective, right?
Yeah, and you know why that's really important is because it allows you to hold on when the market goes down. You know, typically what happens, at least according to Murphy's Law, is you buy a stock because you think it's at a good price. And what does that mean? You believe that it's going to start to go up, but of course you buy it and then it goes down more and it keeps going down. And you have to have the wherewithal to hold on to this position and say, you know, my analysis about the company was correct, if you continue to believe that. But the market maybe didn't quite figure out exactly what I know to be true. And the market push the price of the stock down. But if you really believe in the fundamental value of the stock, you'll be able to hold on. And the greatest value, you know, Benjamin Graham type of people out there, those sort of investors, they're not worried day to day. You know, they are literally okay to buy a company and pretend that they shut the stock market for 10 years and then they'll show up again. That, by the way, shutting the stock market is yet another thing that Warren told me the other day.
Yeah, and that, I think that's because they figure out what the value of the company is, and then they're buying it below that. So then they feel like if it hasn't been realized in the market, then it's still a great investment, and they're willing to hold it until that's seen in the market and that full value is realized. But I agree with you about the moat, and I think that's a great brand, and that's, you know, what Warren Buffett made a lot of his money on is Coca-Cola, Disney, companies that have great brands that builds a moat around a company, make it hard for competitors to outdo them. And so I think that's still really important, as well as being at the top of your industry. I think being number one in your category, your sector, your industry is super important. And that's something that a company like General Electric, you know, used to use over the years. They'd only buy companies that were number one or two in their industry, and that's how they grew their business over the years.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And Linda, you talk about finding the value, and you talked about PE ratio. Do you have any other favorite indicators that you use when you're trying to evaluate whether or not something is a good value?
Absolutely. I think PE ratio is just a starting indicator. That's the simplest one to look at to say, is this company ridiculously overvalued, which I think Amazon is right now, because for every $1, you're paying $178 for that dollar of earnings, which I think is nuts, which is, you know, another reason it's not considered a value stock. It's not something that Warren, I think, would ever buy. But, you know, it doesn't mean it's not a great company. It just means it's not having to be profitable right now and follow what normal companies have to follow in terms of having profitability and earnings and things like that. It doesn't have many earnings, and it's not being held to the standard of a tried and true business that is profitable over time because people are willing to invest in the future and see what it's doing in the future. But in terms of other metrics, yes, you can look at dividends. I think that's helpful. But for me, the bottom line is always earnings. Is this company earning more year after year after year? And we just saw Goldman Sachs this week come out and miss their earnings number. And now today they're getting downgraded by companies. Their stock has gone down. It's important to always be making more money. And if a company doesn't do that, it's going to fall out of favor. So I think great companies for me are more growth oriented than value oriented, but that's just a personal preference as an investor.
And it's not always true, right? I'm getting this incredible feeling of deja vu when we spoke about Apple a few months ago that missed earnings and then the stock continued to go up. And not that I'm recommending it, obviously, but is that the exception that proves the rule, or is that just in general, it's a good idea to look for companies that have growing earnings, but it's not the be-all and end-all?
Well, I think there's always reasons why companies miss earnings. So is the reason they missed earnings just because a shipment was late or people aren't buying a phone because a newer phone is coming and they're waiting for the next upgrade? You know, in that case, you can understand that's a temporary situation. Or in Goldman Sachs' situation, it was that their traders had a really bad trading record that quarter, and they were 40% below their usual trading performance. And so they have to correct that and turn it around, or their company could continue to be less profitable. So I think investors are saying, is this a temporary thing? If it is, they're willing to give it a pass and overlook it. Or are they saying, is this a permanent problem? Is the, you know, company's growth cycle over? You know, back in the day, Microsoft was the darling tech company and had great earnings all the time. And then Linux came out as a free corporate software that was supposed to, you know, take profits away from Microsoft. And that's when we saw Microsoft's stock price peak, and it didn't exceed that again for over 10 years later. So companies can get way ahead of themselves, and they can become darlings and favorites and FANG stocks and the Four Horsemen. And there's been lots of names for the Nifty 50. You know, over time, there's been lots of names for these darlings. But that doesn't mean that in the long term, they're the winners. And I think what Warren Buffett tries to do is buy companies that he can own for his entire lifetime, which is why he stayed away from tech for a long time and said it was not in his circle of competence. So he wanted to, you know, stay with what he knew and not invest in tech.
What I really like, Linda, about what you're saying is something I used to teach clients, which is when you're investing, especially in individual stocks, you need to ask look at all these metrics that you're talking about, because they allow you to ask why. Like what you just spent some time doing was answering a lot of why, and you can't even ask why if you don't follow these metrics. So if we start off with the PE ratio that you talked about, and we compare the PE ratio with other companies that it competes with, does it have a higher or lower PE ratio? Whether it has a higher or lower PE ratio isn't as important as the next question, which is why does it have a higher or lower PE ratio? And then that allows you to dig in more to the company. Then when you look at earnings, why did they miss earnings was a question you asked. I even like looking at revenue, right? Like sales for a lot of companies, are sales increasing? And then are expenses increasing the same? Because free cash flow is important, I think, to a healthy company, just like it is to a healthy person in their personal life, looking at debt levels. And so if I see a spike in the debt during a time in the past few years, I ask why. I see a spike or a decrease in earnings, I ask why. And I love being able to do that, because then I get really comfortable with the company and I know what I'm investing in. Because at some point, it's going to go bad, right? At some point, the company's not going to act the way that I had hoped it would act. And if I know a little bit about the company and I've already asked why they act a certain way, I'm more likely to know what to do when bad news hits.
Yeah, I think that's all great advice. And those are good indicators as well.
Well, Joe, if bad news hits, wouldn't you be more likely, if this is a company that you really feel is a good value, you know, I'm not talking about fundamental bad news where they completely change the company, but it's supposed to be that when you've investigated a company, of course it's going to have bad news from time to time. And sometimes it'll seem pretty serious. The CEO is indicted for something, or they're going to have bad bookkeeping, or their products don't sell, or the market turns against them for a little while. But if the fundamentals of the company haven't really changed, shouldn't it be that you're not going to sell, you'll just ride through it?
Well, the answer is maybe, but until I know exactly what that news is and how it's affected the company in the past and what I think it's going to do to long-term profits, I don't know. And I find a lot of investors just don't know. You know, I would much rather know and be able to ask myself that question. Am I going to ride this out, or is this the indicator that breaks the camel's back?
You guys are making me so tired just listening to this.
Why?
So while I'm at it, I'm going to put in my plug for indexing.
Saves a lot of time.
Because it does. It saves a lot of time. And, you know, you just kind of ride the market gains over time.
Well, let me ask you, can I ask you, there are indexes that are value indexes. So would you, if you believed in this value investing concept, would you say, well, instead of buying a growth index or a REIT index or, you know, a mid-cap index, I'll buy a value stock index? Is that something that you would put into your portfolio?
Yeah, definitely. That's something I consider, just because there will be such a large number of items in there and it'll kind of protect you a little bit. And the hope, just sort of like how you use money managers, Doug, to manage your money and take care of your own portfolio, I would kind of hope that, you know, as far as putting the value items into an index fund, I'd kind of hope that the threshold to be included would be true value in investing. I mean, let's be honest, I use indexing kind of as a way to have somebody manage my money without me having to pay a money manager. Let's be real.
I mean, I think one of the things that Miranda does really well is invest in things like the Dividend Aristocrats. And that's an interesting ETF because it's companies that have raised their dividends for 25 years. So if they're raising their dividend, that means they have to be making more money in order to be paying that dividend out to shareholders. So, you know, sort of by definition, they probably have increasing earnings and profitability and stability. And these tend to be large mega companies. And maybe they're not growing as fast, but they have that cushion of paying the dividend. And I think that's a great strategy for a value investor.
Yeah, for sure. I love the dividend aristocrats. So I think that about wraps it up for today. So let's hear what's going on in your necks of the woods. Let's start with you, Joe. What is happening over at Stacking Benjamins?
Oh, we're having a lot of fun at Stacking Benjamins back in the basement. And we have an interesting story that happened to a friend of, I think, a few of ours. Shannon Allen is someone who was purchasing a house and got scammed out of over $50,000. And she tells this great cautionary tale about how the scam happened and the work she had to do to try to get her money back. To make a long story really, really short, she got an email right before the closing that said, nope, from her title company, or what looked to be her title company, saying, no, you got to wire your down payment for the house to a different bank account than we had told you before. She went to the bank, she followed the instructions, not knowing that it was really a hacker who had gotten into the title company's email and emailed all this money, over $50,000, to a hacker. So she'll tell that story on Stacking Benjamins.
Awesome. I love that. I'm just going to interject here real quick because, interestingly enough, I just talked to Shannon about the same story, and it will be in written form on Student Loan Hero. So, you know, check that out as well. And then, Doug, what's happening over in your neck of the woods?
So I'd like to tell you what's going on in Goldstein on Gelt, but I'm thinking of telling this story there, and you guys reminding me about being scammed. You know, even as an advisor, people try to scam me all the time. Like, I'll get emails from clients that are really personal. They're like, you know, hey, Doug, I'm, you know, on vacation and I need some money. Could you send it over? I mean, they're even more detailed than that. And they come from the client's email account. And so it looks really good. We have all sorts of internal procedures to protect from it. So it's never going to happen. But I think that people, you know, when I tell clients, sometimes clients feel like they're wiring money. And I say, well, you know, we have to check the signatures and there's all these procedures. And they find this a little bit onerous. But at the end of the day, if you're not working with companies that are really, really careful about protecting you and your money, you end up like being a guest on the Stacking Benjamins show telling some sob story about how you lost $50,000. So A, be careful, and B, be delicate to the financial advisors and banks who make you jump through hoops sometimes to wire money safely.
Oh, hey, and Linda has had to drop out real quick, but right now over at Be Wealthy and Smart, Linda is doing a podcast about how to retire by age 40. So if you're interested in early retirement and finding out how Linda did it herself, go ahead and head over to Be Wealthy and Smart. And
but I'm almost 50. I can't do that.
Well, whatever. You don't count then.
Yeah, give it up, Joe.
It's too late for you.
All right, right.
In the meantime, make sure you head over to MoneyTreePodcast.com. You'll find all of our episodes there. Subscribe to us on Apple Podcast and also on Stitcher. And leave us a review. We love to hear from you. On top of that, make sure that you are sending us your questions. We love to hear them, and we will be doing a listener questions episode very soon. So go ahead, send us our questions, and maybe we will answer them right here on the Money Tree Podcast. And until next time, remember, no one will take care of your money as well as you do, so invest in your life.
Thank you for listening to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Visit us at moneytreepodcast.com for more free investing resources.